You are listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina in for Rob Ferret. Coming up, a survey of recent high school graduates shows that many are changing their plans for the fall because of the coronavirus. We'll find out what that looks like and how to support the young people around us. Now, a new mask ordinance took effect today in Green Bay. Basically, if you're older than five, you have to wear a face mask in indoor public spaces. Mask orders also started up today in Racine and Superior. The Green Bay City Council passed the measure last Tuesday by a vote of 7-5. And then one member said all 12 of them started getting death threats. According to the Green Bay Press Gazette, Police Chief Andrew Smith said he'd received one as well, as did Mayor Eric Genrich and the city attorney. Smith says the department is investigating and will contact the FBI if necessary. Megan Hart is Wisconsin Public Radio's reporter in Green Bay with us to talk about this now. Hi, Megan.
Hi.
What do we know about these threats? How many were there? How specific were they? Tell us about it.
Yeah, so they voted last Tuesday to create this mask ordinance. Since then, apparently all 12 members of the city council did receive threats. I spoke to city councilwoman Barbara Dorff last week, who said that while every council member had received threats, she and another council member received more specific or graphic threats. She did say that one of the threats was against her family members, which was really, you know, hard for her and very hurtful. I know Randy Scannell, who's the council member who first proposed the ordinance, he said he received a threat of hanging. I think he was called a traitor and a tyrant. So it seems like there were several different threats with different degrees of severity.
Do we know how people received these threats?
As far as I know, they were mostly via email. And when I spoke to Barbara Dorff, she did say that she also got a lot of emails in advance of the meeting where they approved the ordinance on both sides, more than she'd ever received probably on any topic since she joined city council 5 years ago. And since she received the threats and it became public, she's gotten a lot of support on both sides, both people who supported the mask ordinance and those who didn't, kind of coming out to show her some support with all that's been going on. So yeah, it's been a lot of communication with the city councilors here in Green Bay over the last week or so.
Yeah, the city council passed the ordinance. So why the police chief, the mayor, the city attorney? Were they outspoken in one way or the other about wearing masks?
The mayor was outspoken about wearing masks. He is the one who asked the city council to move on it. But it sounds like the threats went to everyone, including the five city council members who voted against the ordinance. So I'm not sure if they all received exactly the same threat, but they weren't discriminating.
And at least a couple of the city council members have been talking about why people are making these really extreme threats. What are they saying?
Yeah, when I spoke to Barbara Dorff last week, she said that she understood that this is a really difficult time for a lot of people who, you know, feel like they don't have control. They maybe are worried about their job or have lost their job. Of course, they're worried about their health and their family's health. And so maybe an issue like this mask ordinance was something that they thought they could control in their life. And so she, you know, she understood that people are under a lot of stress right now, and that might have contributed to the extreme response. I know, Councilman Randy Scannell, he told police or he told the local news here that he felt like it may have one of the threats might have come from someone who was unwell. So, there's some speculation, but police are working on them and taking them all seriously, regardless of where they might have come from or why they were sent.
Yeah. Where are we with the investigation?
The police chief, Andrew Smith, said that detectives are investigating. When I spoke to Barbara Dorff last week, she said that she understood that the detectives were going to be visiting some people that might have been involved in some way. And the chief also said that he was willing to involve the FBI if need be, because they do take threats like this against elected officials very seriously.
So remind us now again, the mask mandate went into effect today. What does it look like?
Yeah, the anyone over the age of 5 is required to wear a mask in public places if they are indoors, unless they have some type of health condition that prevents them from doing so. So it started this morning. I know it seemed like a lot of businesses here, like they have all over the country, had created their own mask ordinances in advance of the city ordinance. So when I went grocery shopping over the weekend, for example, a lot of people were already wearing their masks. But it did go into effect today. Chief Smith said last week, if stores notice that, you know, there's somebody that is violating the ordinance, they can call the police. It would be considered a low priority call. But the police, you know, if they're able to, would show up there and initially ask the person to wear a mask, try to educate them on why they should wear a mask. They have the ability to issue a fine that turns out to be just over $70 by the time you include court costs. Or if somebody is really belligerent, they actually have the ability to arrest them for trespassing.
And we know Brown County, which includes Green Bay, is working on its own mask mandate. So we'll make sure to pay attention for follow-up details. Megan, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Megan Hart is Wisconsin Public Radio's reporter in Green Bay. We're talking with her about the threats to Green Bay officials over the city's new mask ordinance that took effect today. And coming up here on Central Time, we're talking to a pair of Appleton High School graduates who decided to start a racial justice organization specifically for the community of Appleton. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us on Central Time. I'm Keely Boltina. Coming up, we're talking to a pair of recent high school graduates in Appleton who decided to spend their summer organizing for racial justice in their city. We hear from them about their project, Appleton Community Catalyst. Right now, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about breaking up with technology.
I bet some of you are a little addicted to your phones right now. Keeping up with texts, social media, news updates, and cat videos, you're likely spending more time with your phones than the actual people in your lives. Comedian Esteban Tuma got out of an unhealthy relationship with his phone before the pandemic hit, and he offers this cautionary tale.
I should have seen it coming. Right after my phone broke up with me, I recalled all the signs I had missed. It had been acting pretty distant lately. It felt like every notification came with a sigh, every calendar input a bit testy, every response to the on button a little off. I mean, I guess I had been distant too, keeping it in my pocket while having dinner or reading a book in the bathroom, a book? And always with the perfect excuse, zero photos of the Steely Dan tribute concert, I had low battery, no emojis in a 2-hour span, I was driving. I guess I could have at least checked it for notifications during the boring stretches of highway, but no, I kept it in my back pocket like some cheap leather wallet. Have things really changed that much since we first met at the Verizon store months ago? I was there looking for anything, an LG, hell, even a Samsung, something casual I could use for a couple of months. Nothing too serious, I just wanted to have some fun. But as I browsed, Dan, the clerk, pointed it out from across the store. That one would be perfect for you, he said. I felt like a boy watching my prom date descend the stairs. My heart was racing. I had it unpackaged before we even got to the car. We spent an hour just getting to know each other right there in the mall parking lot, our first date. But now it wouldn't even respond to my pleas. At least tell me why. Burn my pocket, delete my photos, anything but the silent mode treatment. At least give me the, it's not you, it's my operating system line. I laid awake in bed that night thinking, where had our intimacy gone? Like when I changed the pin lock to thumb recognition, the phone gently shook after those 3 seconds of contact, opening its home screen to me as I slowly explored the pages of the app's menu. The screen gradually warming as I slid down the notifications panel. I dimmed the brightness and this is no ordinary love. I couldn't sleep at all. The next morning, I grabbed some coffee and tried to stay positive. I can still fix things, I said. I started by asking my so-called buddies on the tech support forum, have you tried a hard reset? XX Crush Bites XX asked. A hard reset? Was he crazy? And erase everything with build together? No. I logged out without even saying goodbye. I needed professional advice, and there was only one place where I could get it. Back at the Verizon store, Dan remembered us right away. "Let me see what I can do," he said kindly. After several minutes that seemed like hours, Dan called me over with a sad nod. "It's best if you both move on," he said, and he was right, and I knew it. Heartbroken, I asked, "Can I just pick up my SIM and SD cards?" Dan gave me a minute. The phone waited in silence as I grabbed my things. I held the battery in my hands, feeling its heat one last time. The phone was totally dark now, nothing but a black screen reflecting back to me what could have been. I got in my car, wiped my tears, and turned on the radio. Maybe I'd call the guys, grab a beer at that place near the Apple store. It's been a while. I wonder what Apple's been up to, I thought. Maybe I'd drop in and see what's up. Maybe find something casual, something fun. You know, nothing too serious.
Esteban Tuma is a comedian who used to live in Madison and is now in Michigan. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Maureen McCollum.
Now, graduating from high school during a pandemic is already, well, not what those graduates had in mind for their rite of passage. Add to that months of social upheaval over racial justice. It's a turbulent time to be a forward-looking teen, and we wouldn't blame a young person for shying away from the issues that can feel like noise. But for Endemazia Fonkum and Isabella Devine, 2020 graduates of Appleton North High School, they decided to tackle racism head-on at home in Appleton. This summer, the two created the organization Appleton Community Catalyst. They say to help people in marginalized and oppressed communities be seen and heard. And we have them on the line. Endemazia Fonkum, welcome to the Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
And Isabella Devine, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Isabella, tell us about this organization you started. What is it? What are your goals?
Sure. So, Endemazia and I started this organization. Both of us recently graduated from Appleton North High School. And after the killing of George Floyd and all of the protests and things that were happening in Appleton, we really wanted to create an organization that would continue the movement in different ways. Just because the protests were ending and people stopped posting things on social media doesn't mean that the problem stops. So we created Appleton Community Catalyst basically to combat racism within our community, let people know that there is racism within Appleton. It's not just a New York problem. It's not just a Chicago problem. It's happening everywhere. And that we really want to give minorities a voice within our community and highlight their stories.
And Amazia, where do you see the problems then that Isabella is highlighting?
Yeah, so like Isabella was saying, racism isn't just a New York issue. It's everywhere, but it's also in everything. So that's kind of what spurred the inspiration for our first event, which was a free food bank in our downtown area. Because our downtown area is one of the less affluent areas in Appleton, but it also is a food desert, meaning that there's no access to a grocery store in a 2-mile radius. And so when we're looking at low socioeconomic areas and seeing that overlap with racial diversity in our area, we thought, well, let's go, let's get started, let's give people what they need. They need food, they need housing. These are all areas that racism has seeped into, especially in our area, where it's less interpersonal and it's more systematic.
How did that free farmers market work out?
Great. Honestly, beautifully. We had over 1,000 pieces of produce, and just, it was really, really beautiful to see our community come and give, even though it was a day to where we had an extreme storm and we got rained out. but it was entirely youth-led as well. So I got to see so many people, almost 20 volunteers, come together, spur of the moment, when we're thinking that there's about to be a tornado sweeping our way and we're just trying to get people food, pack up all the stuff, load it into their cars, take it into a garage, and then personally deliver it to families at their doorsteps rather than having them come to us. Hmm. So it wasn't what we expected to happen, but it was not better, but it was more heartwarming.
Mm-hmm. Isabella, did you see people make the connections you were hoping they did, that it wasn't just about hunger, but it was about race, it was about connection and community?
Yeah, I did. So we did a lot of social media work before the Free Farmers Market so that people knew what our mission was and why we were doing it. But a lot of people started to acknowledge the fact that we do have an issue in Appleton and that it's not going away anytime soon if we don't do something about it. And so I think that people open their eyes to what's happening in our community. And that's why so many people came out and gave us and delivered food for those lower income families.
Yeah, Isabella, though, I mean, you acknowledge you're both 2020 grads. What motivated you to go in this direction and start something like this as you graduate from high school?
Yeah, so Endemazi and I both have experienced racism for our entire lives. It's something that, being a person of color, that's just, sadly, it's what comes with the description. And so it's something that I think both of us have been thinking about for a long time. What can I do to share my story and have people understand what it's like to be Black in Appleton? And I called, or Endemazi and I got on a call one night, and we hashed out the entire organization in one night just because we had so much passion for making a change within our community that didn't necessarily see us for who we were. And again, a lot of it was, the reason it all started going was because of the killing of George Floyd and the protests and the posts from people our age on their social media accounts. And we started to worry about what happens when that stops. Do people forget about the movement? And we know that just because the protests are stopping doesn't mean that there isn't still an issue.
Yeah, and thinking about that momentum, though, I mean, graduating from high school is one of those times in our lives where we, like, have an opportunity to cut ties, right? Like, you could just walk away. You could just say, yeah, Appleton has its problems, but I'm not going to be there anymore. And instead, Endemazi, you're trying to make connections and tackle these issues in your hometown.
Yeah, that's something that we've been thinking about, because we kind of started with this knowing that our involvement in it kind of has like an expiration date. But if we don't start it, then what's going to happen? It's better for us to take that momentum and push it forward and then leave a sort of legacy for others to pick up and like pass the torch on to other people who can take that momentum and move it forward and move it towards change. Because the fact of the matter is that if nobody does something, then nothing gets done. And we'd rather start something and have it keep moving forward than lose the momentum in the first place, even when we're both looking at leaving in about a month.
Yeah, and to add on to that, there are little children who are children of color who are experiencing the same things. And so since Endemazi and I both went through that, we'd like to change it for them. So the future is them, it's us. But to have, if you can make enough change where a five-year-old doesn't have to experience racism the way that I did when I was five, then you're making a change, and it's a positive change. Because no kid should feel othered at such a young age or ever.
Isabella, how did you feel othered then? How do you feel othered?
It's very interesting, not in a good way, obviously, but definitely at school you walk into a room and you're constantly aware of how many people of color are in the room with you. and you're reading texts that have to do with African Americans and people, and some of the books use the N-word and things like that, and people look at you as if you know everything and should be able to give them the answer of whether or not they should say the N-word or be an expert on slavery or that type of thing. And it becomes isolating, or people use the N-word as a joke all the time. It's kind of like a tagline, unfortunately. And so I think for a lot of minorities, they feel isolated in the sense that they always feel slightly different than their white counterparts.
And Demazia, are you trying to tell your story, trying to make connections with local leaders so that the community can try to tackle some of these issues?
Yeah, of course. Going through our Free Farmers Market event, we had a lot of cooperation through the city of Appleton, through our new mayor, and we also had a lot of support coming in from local business leaders and other people in city government. It's really, again, heartwarming to see that kind of support coming from people who are so prominent in the community, and seeing even like the city of Appleton has a diversity coordinator come out so strongly in support of an initiative like this. It's a connection that we hope doesn't just end with an event or two. And we believe that there's a strong commitment going forward, but that's what a lot of our other projects try to address, is saying it's not just a protest and it's not just a farmer's market. These are things that we have to constantly challenge within ourselves and make sure that we're creating a better world going forward.
And Demazia, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
And Isabella, thanks for being with us.
Of course.
That was Endemazia Fonkum and Isabella Devine. They're both 2020 graduates of Appleton North High School. We talked with them about the racial justice organization they created just this summer, Appleton Community Catalyst. You can find more information about their initiatives for change on their Facebook and Instagram accounts. Those are linked on our website. Just go to WPR.org/Central Time. Coming up, high school graduates spend months, even years, thinking about what comes next. And now COVID-19 is changing their plans. We'll find out about a recent survey on how the pandemic has altered what people intend to do this fall. You're listening to Central Time. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina in for Rob Ferret. The last few months of high school can be full of official decisions to be made about where to go to college or to take time off to work, how to handle friendships, family relationships, dating, when you know things are just going to change. Add a global pandemic and all the ways that life is changing, and 2020's graduating high school seniors are dealing with a lot more than usual. A recent national survey commissioned by Junior Achievement shows that the uncertainty is changing plans for many of them. Jennifer Reichlin is currently serving as the director of counseling at Marquette University High School. She worked previously as the chair of the counseling department at Burlington High School and as a school counselor for the Milwaukee Public School District. Last year, she was named Wisconsin School Counselor of the Year by the Wisconsin School Counselor Association and the American School Counselor Association. Jennifer, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And also joining this conversation is Michael Frona, who's president of Junior Achievement of Wisconsin. He earned a bachelor degree in education from the University of Wisconsin-Madison and a master's degree in public administration from the University of Wisconsin-Oshkosh. Michael, thanks for being with us today.
Good afternoon, Keely.
Michael, let's start here. Junior Achievement did this survey. Tell us who was surveyed and when it happened.
We were involved doing a survey with another agency at the end of May of this year. By invitation and online surveys, we collected responses from 1,000 graduating seniors from this year's class from across the country.
And why did Junior Achievement want to take on collecting this information and figuring out where students were?
For over 100 years, Junior Achievement has been involved in inspiring and preparing young people for their futures, whether that's college, career, entrepreneurialism, or just basic financial literacy. So it was very interesting to find out what are the things that we've been teaching really since the first grade. Have they been applied to people's decision making, or have they not? And that was a large part of why the survey was established.
So don't keep us in suspense then. What did you find? How large of an impact did you find that this coronavirus pandemic is having on what 2020 graduates plan to do in the fall?
Well, not surprisingly, nearly half of the respondents said COVID-19 has made some altercation in their plans. And the survey questions were designed in such a way that we could really capture a lot of demographic information between males and females and household incomes and what the original plans were. And we really see a lot of changes occurring regardless if a person decided to go or to pursue a 4-year degree or a 2-year degree. And there's many factors that the survey uncovers regarding that, which I'd be happy to talk to as we continue our dialogue this afternoon.
Certainly. Jennifer, about half of graduates in this survey say, yeah, my plans have changed because of COVID-19. Does that surprise you at all?
I mean, it doesn't surprise me in that it would have some impact on what their plans were. I don't know if I could say that for the students that I worked with at Burlington High School this past fall, if I would say that half changed their plans, but definitely 100%, it was certainly a factor. It was another layer of consideration. College planning or going into the military, going into an apprenticeship, those are huge choices, and there's many things to consider. And it was something that was very impactful for many students to have to think about, does this change what I want? Do I want to be closer to home? Can I afford this? What are job market trends? So there's a lot of things students were thinking about that I saw a delayed process in the decision-making, more so than anything in terms of students were more nervous to say, yes, this is what I'm doing. It usually was like March, April, we would have a good sense of what students' plans were definitively. And it was definitely more into May that students were making those choices by and large, it seemed like.
Sure. Trying to get as much solid information as you can before you have to actually make the call.
Yes. Yeah. Just that's the whole with all of this. It's just everything is so uncertain that you kind of wanted to make sure you know exactly as much as you can what this would look like going to school in the fall. And making sure that if this is what you were thinking it's going to be, is that in line with what that experience will be?
And there's the one aspect that we're talking about where people might be changing the decisions that they've made about going far away or staying close to home. But there's also the factor that colleges or may have changed how they're taking students, whether it's online or hybrid classes. There's situations where people have been offered jobs and now those have been rescinded. So there's also, Jennifer, this aspect that we don't have as much control over some of these decisions right now.
Right, right. So letting students know that with anything, especially in terms of a school counselor, that's one of the huge things that we talk about with students is, you know, there's things we can control and things we can't. And things we can, well, let's figure out, well, what can I do about this? What can I change? What's right for me? And then with things you can't, trying to either change that lens we see it, change that perspective, or trying to find some kind of acceptance or resilience to then at least grow from whatever that challenge might be.
Jennifer Reichlin is director of counseling at Marquette University High School. We're talking with her and also with Michael Frona, who's with Junior Achievement of Wisconsin. And we're discussing just how many high school graduates have had their plans change because of this pandemic. And we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. Maybe you are a high school student who's seen your plans for next month change. Maybe you have a high schooler that you know or in your family who's grappling with some of these decisions or is just getting word about how their plans have to be different now. Share your experience with us at 800-642-1234. Michael, let's dig into some of the specifics of the survey. What did it show about the need to work for people who responded to it?
We were seeing a lot more people needing to prepare financially for the decision. As we all know and have heard in the news over the last several years, the investment into a college education can be quite significant. And really what impacted the survey respondents, we believe, is when we looked at the question, how has the COVID-19 experienced or impacted your family financially? Did you have a parent or guardian who lost their position or had a reduced number of hours? And was that going to change fundamentally how you would approach the year? And indeed, we saw that the more that there was impact at home, the more impact there would be on these college decisions. And much of it will then impact how a student decides how they're going to pay for and invest in college. And if I may, I'd like to go to something that Jennifer mentioned, and that is when people are making that decision about whether to go close to home or further away, they're also looking at the perceived value of the way the education is going to be delivered. For some, the idea of sitting in a classroom with somebody in the front of the room, a professor, and the conversation being bolstered by others around them is appealing. For others, an online program would suffice. And so when people are looking at investing in the experience that they may or may not have, what terms of what they value, they'll make a decision about that as well. So we did see a number of the students needing to make decisions about how they were going to financially invest in college.
Yeah, paying for higher education is a concern for, I'm going to say, a lot of students. Jennifer, is that what you hear from your graduating seniors, thinking about the money aspect of this?
Absolutely. And that's kind of what I was hitting at about trying to stay closer to home, because some students did make that change to decide to go instead to 4-year right away to do one of the technical colleges. And they tend to have half the cost. Students can live at home. A lot of times if they had a high school job, they can retain that job and continue to work. And so then there's an articulation agreement where then they can finish that bachelor's degree after the 2 years, especially after the uncertainty of the pandemic hopefully dissipates. And the other thing I would say with financing college, it's extremely important that students file the FAFSA, which is the free application for federal student aid. And so they can do that as early as October 1st of their senior year. And there may be changes in income, as Michael was attesting to, that, you know, if students lost or parents lost a job, or if there's change in income, if there's health reasons, whatever might be going on because of all of COVID and the pandemic, that the students reach out to their financial aid office at the institution in which they're going to be enrolling in the fall to let them know that maybe there's some changes to what they had put on that FAFSA they filed back in October, to see if maybe there's some other funds there for the students or other kind of resources that they can utilize to make that college more affordable for them.
We're taking calls during this discussion at 800-642-1234. And Brian from La Crosse is ready to join the conversation. Hi, Brian.
Hi, guys. Thanks for the topic. I guess an extension from what your guest just said, we just threw our kid his graduation party yesterday, and that was a topic of conversation. One of his friends was going out to Madison and was concerned about housing not being reimbursed if there isn't housing, or if all the classes are online and kids learn better face-to-face, then is it just easier to say, instead of Madison, stay here, go to UW La Crosse, take the classes, transfer back, and, you know, save money on that? It's just unfortunate that, you know, now we're a month out. They're trying to, you know, transition from high school days and look forward to their journey in college, and the stress level just continues, and not only for them, but, you know, for us parents as well. Thanks for the topic.
Yeah, Brian, thanks for sharing your story with us. Jennifer, what do you hear there?
Well, what I would encourage, and I know it's hard because you can't have necessarily all the information, and colleges are trying to be as transparent as possible, and they're still articulating what their reopening plan is, you know, what they're doing in terms of students, if there's any exposure or cases and health services, but just trying to get as familiar as what that COVID plan is, and they should have those statements on their websites. You know, reach out to the admissions office, Residence Life, financial aid office, the academic advisor. Email is wonderful because that way you have all the threads of conversation, that there's not any bad question, because, you know, colleges and military apprenticeships, they're choosing students, but you guys are also choosing these institutions. And so just to, as much as possible, get the information you need. And again, it kind of is a fluid process right now, so it's not all out there, but continue to ask questions, know your resources, be an advocate for, you know, the student. I would encourage to be an advocate for him or herself, but then also parents, you know, supporting their students and advocating for them as well, too.
We're talking with Jennifer Reichlin, Director of Counseling at Marquette University High School. Also hearing from Michael Frona of Junior Achievement of Wisconsin. And we're looking at the results of a national survey of graduating high school seniors about how the coronavirus pandemic has changed their plans for this fall. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Are you or is your child in the position of moving from high school onto work or onto college? How has the pandemic affected decisions about what to do in the fall? Maybe some of those have been out of your control. How are you handling it? 800-642-1234 is the number to call as we continue this conversation here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Keely Boltina, and we're talking about a national survey of students graduating from high school and how the pandemic has affected their plans for the fall and beyond. We have Jennifer Reichlin, Director of Counseling at Marquette University High School with us. Also, Michael Frona, who is with Junior Achievement of Wisconsin. And we want to hear from you. There's a line available for you at 800-642-1234. Are you or is your child in this situation right now? What are you trying to weigh in making the right decisions? Maybe the pandemic has made paying for a college education even more challenging. Give us a call at 800-642-1234 to share your story here with us. Michael, let's talk more about the survey of those who still plan to go on to higher education in the fall. Did your survey show a change in how students felt about that?
It did. It showed that not only was the academic portion of the college experience relevant and important to them, but they evaluated whether or not they thought that nightlife, student organizations, recreation, food service, residence life, were they all going to be what they expected to be? And we saw that not having the good feeling about, or not, I shouldn't say a good feeling, I would say not knowing what those experiences were going to be like, whether they would meet their expectations or not, had about 30% of the survey respondents questioning their decision about would this be the year to go to college. I also think it's important, if I just may mention this so we have time before the top of the hour, is this survey also looked at the importance of asking young people how important was it to them that they had a versatile career that could span different industries. And we found that in times of crisis like this, when they saw people around them losing their positions, not so much what they were going to do, but the skills they were going to learn to apply to what they did became very, very important, with over 35% of the respondents strongly agreeing that having skills that could be versatile in a number of different industries was more important than ever. And an additional 50% said they agreed with that statement. So we're seeing almost 90% of our survey respondents saying, it's not so much what I'm going to do, but I better go seek out skills that are going to have versatility between industries because I don't know what the future of work holds.
So it sounds like these assumptions we sometimes make about people, you know, choosing careers just because they love it and not because they're being practical. Your survey is showing that students are really being pretty pragmatic right now and trying to make these decisions.
I hesitate to call it the beauty of the pandemic because there's really not much beautiful about it. But the benefit of times like this is it does help us push the pause button and ask ourselves, what are our needs versus what are our wants? And that's a lesson that's never too young to start to teach.
We're talking with Michael Frona, who's with Junior Achievement of Wisconsin. And we'll also bring back in Jennifer Reichlin, who's Director of Counseling at Marquette University High School. We also want to talk with Sam from Green Bay, Wisconsin. Hi, Sam.
Hi, I'm not a high school graduate this year. I'll be returning to fall classes as a second year in college at UW-Madison. And as far as my plans and changing, if I could go back a couple months and maybe take the semester off, I think I might have, and I think it would have been the smart move, but I kind of was banking on us being reopened. And unfortunately, we'll be online for this semester. And I feel as though it's a little bit strange to me that most colleges that I know of are going to be charging the same rates for online and in person, when online we don't have access to resources as simple as going to the dining hall or even like going to libraries with our friends to study rather than trying to organize a study group or something over Zoom.
Yeah, Sam, thanks for explaining your process to us, and good luck with that. Jennifer, you know, Sam is talking more about that college experience. It's not just about the academics. It's about working together with other people and making those connections.
Right, right. And kind of hitting on a little bit of what Michael was saying in terms of there's some things that across all careers you need, like those soft skills. So then I would at least highlight, you know, if it's online, if it's a hybrid, if it's in person, you know, hopefully those soft skills, those communication aspects, you know, the analyzing information, working with others, probably having to embrace some new forms of technology. These are all skills that's definitely going to be beneficial. And I know there's, in terms of the financial piece behind the schooling, I'm not really addressing that in terms of Sam's point. But it's just, obviously these are very different times, and, you know, you can't always feel things happen for the best, but you can try to make the best out of them. And hopefully sooner than later, you know, ideally, yes, you want to be on campus. You want to go to those athletic events. You want to have that college experience, and hopefully that happens sooner than later. But definitely you're still getting those soft skills, those academic skills you need in terms of what that college can provide to continue on that degree.
I want to bring in one more caller here. Yeah. Jessica from Oconto Falls has a story for us. Hi, Jessica.
Hi. My son attends UW River Falls, and he has just found out this last week that all of his classes, his specific classes, have changed to online. So he has decided that he's going to stay home and take his classes online. We're trying to be positive because we are kind of all disappointed about it, but we're trying to be positive and know that he can work full time, still get his classes, and return in January. We figured he'll be able to save enough money to pay for second semester. And just like the last caller, is he disappointed by all of those other specific things? Of course he is. But we're just trying to really be positive about it. And he's getting to work in his field that he's going to school for and make a little extra money.
Oh, Jessica, thank you so much for sharing that story with us. I want to give each of our guests about a minute quick just to offer us a little bit of advice. Jennifer, as a school counselor, what do you want to say to young people having to make decisions in this uncertain time?
It might reiterate a little bit of what I said before, is just try to get as much information as you can. And sometimes it's always coming in, or things seem to be ever changing, but trying to stay as on top of what that information is as possible to make those decisions that you want. If you want to try to defer, if you want to do the online, if you want to stay closer and do a 2-year and then do the 4-year, if you want to work full time, you will know, like, there's not one right choice here. There's a best fit. And just weighing in all of these factors. And again, talking to people that care about you, your resources, just trying to process all of that with people that you trust, that, you know, obviously care about you, but then hopefully aren't also then biased, and just trying to make the best choice you can for yourself in this moment when things aren't very clear sometimes.
Yeah. And Michael, what do you want people to know?
These are the times that I think we need dexterity in our decision making, and we also need dexterity in terms of what we expect out of our experiences. And by dexterity, I mean very similar to what Jennifer was saying. There is no wrong decision that a young person can make. They just need the support of educators and caring adults. And that's not untrue for anybody in a life change or at a stage of life where they change. And I think with Junior Achievement and the work that our school counselors do, we are consistently trying to bring scenarios to them to help them make very good decisions when that time comes. COVID-19 and the pandemic is something none of us expected. And so it's the pinnacle of a crisis to make a decision in. But we've been through this as a country and a nation and a world for 100 years, world wars and depressions, some of them that we even put the word right. Great in front of them. So let's support our young people. Let's help them make the best decisions for them and for us. And I think together we're going to be okay.
And a thank you to Michael and also to Jennifer. Michael Frohna is with Junior Achievement of Wisconsin. And Jennifer Reichlin is Director of Counseling at Marquette University High School. This is Central Time. Weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m., it's the morning show. Tomorrow, we're talking about analysis about absentee ballots in Wisconsin's April election. It turns out more than 23,000 ballots were thrown out. We'll talk about why officials rejected those ballots and the fact that that number is about the same amount of votes that won Wisconsin for Donald Trump in 2016. That's tomorrow morning here on the Ideas Network. Coming up next, it's news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. And then, does it feel like lately the weekdays kind of blur into the weekend, or maybe that the months just keep passing you by? We talk with a researcher about how COVID-19 has affected our sense of time. I'm Keely Boltina. Thanks for being here with us on Central Time.